But I think the point is, there is the law, and then there's just like the reality that like things are really hard, and like our overwhelming emotion should be compassion towards somebody that is like in a really suffering position.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast.
Heyo.
Today we are talking about some controversial topics. Hopefully not really. Hopefully we're going to just present to you some biblical truths, maybe mixed in with our opinions a little bit, which hopefully are in line with that. But
about,
what are we are talking about a hot topic, which is immigration.
Immigration.
And we're going to hopefully present some biblical topics and maybe how Anglicans are uniquely suited to address this issue. So let's get into it. I'm Andrew Panic.
And I'm Will Schaferman.
And this is Accessibly Anglican, a podcast for the Anglo-curious. Hey, Will.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
Fantastic.
It's beautiful outside.
It is smack dab gorgeous. It's
truly, truly beautiful.
Like, it really feels like fall. Yeah. I think it was 57 degrees this morning when I woke up.
That is so nice.
That's what the weather app on my phone told me.
I got up and I was just staring out the window, and Wesley was like, "What are you looking at, Dada?" And I was like,
"Beauty.
Everything." I was like, "I just want to see what it looks like outside."
I'm actually kind of sad that we're filming this inside right now, because that's an hour of our life that's not outside on a beautiful day like this.
Well, maybe someday we can
Figure out a
good way to do it.
Soundproofed outside
situation. It doesn't even have to be soundproofed. It's just like this area right here is super, like, it's a wind tunnel.
It is.
It makes these crazy sounds.
Maybe the field across from our office, we can just bring the computer.
I mean, we could.
And the iPhone.
A really long extension cable.
Do you need, oh yeah.
Well, I guess we wouldn't need.
Could you do it without?
Yeah, we could do it.
A power source?
Maybe we'll try it someday.
Okay.
Drop us a comment. We beg you every week.
You know what? We could do an episode on beauty in the field with wildflowers over there.
That'd be cool.
Reminds me of a Jars of Clay song.
Reminds me of a Tom Petty song.
Did you grow up with... I mean, you didn't listen to Jars of Clay, did you?
No.
It was kind of before you.
Yeah.
In wild fields with wildflowers. Anyway, it's about this girl that's like running around and is like basking in beauty, and the theme that was the chorus is like, I want to fall in love with, you know, the song, I want to fall in love with you.
I've never heard.
No?
I have no idea what you're talking about. I've never heard this before in my life.
Give me a DM or a YouTube comment if you've heard of this song, because that would make me feel just a little bit younger and better about life. So yeah.
Does it bother you when I point out how old you are?
Actually, I kind of take pride in that.
You should. How old are you?
How old do you think I am?
36?
7.
Ah.
Yeah.
So you're like almost exactly one decade older than me.
You're 28. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You graduated high school in 2006.
Yeah. And you were in 25.
Yeah.
In 2015.
In 2006, I think I was in the third grade.
Yep. Which makes me feel so wise and mature.
Well, you know, it's just like my other boss. I love to give him a hard time. He's 40, and I love to give him a hard time being old, but both of y'all are in better physical shape than me. So,
although you've been Planet Fitnessing a ton recently.
Oh yeah. I've been hitting the gym. I feel great. I don't love or hate the gym. But that's kind of my goal, actually, is I don't need to be Mr. Fitness bro, but I just need to
be healthy.
Just make it a part of my routine,
yep.
Which I'm working on. That's why today is Wednesday. We often record the podcast on Thursday,
mm-hmm.
but we're doing it today so I can go to the gym tomorrow.
Next week, we'll do it on Thursday.
We will?
I don't know.
All right. We'll see. Well, anyway, today, I already mentioned... but if somehow you skip the first 30 seconds of the podcast, we're talking about immigration.
Heyo.
Which has been, I mean, gosh, a constant part of the zeitgeist in America for ever, I guess.
Forever.
But
I'm pulling this up on my phone too because my iPad's low on battery. Keep going.
Word. But I feel like especially recently it's been on the news a lot, and mm-hmm. just like everything else in this day and age, everyone has to have an opinion. Mm. And if you're listening to this podcast, maybe you're interested in having that opinion shaped a little bit by
or
an Anglican
inflamed
pastor and somebody who's wholly unqualified to talk about much of anything. I do have an accounting degree, but don't ask me accounting questions. But at that, we've sort of prepared ahead of time, and I'm gonna let Will take the reins.
Yeah,
this
thank
is me
you.
Passing you the reins. If you can't
this is,
see,
this is
you're
me
listening,
receiving them.
Listening, I'm passing Will the reins.
Here I am on the horse, riding.
I'm still on the horse. You're just driving the horse.
Okay. Well, actually, about 30 minutes ago, Andrew and I went to Publix to pick up some caffeine. And on the way back, Andrew took the driver's seat of the Jeep.
Literally just took it. I didn't ask. But it was fun.
It's fun. If you don't have a Jeep, we talked about buying motorcycles earlier in the podcast.
If that's not your speed,
Jeep might be the ticket.
Spend three times as much and get a Jeep. Unless you were going to buy a Harley and then it's the same price. But I really liked what you had to say. So we've just finished a four-week series at Restoration on generosity. And Will said, maybe I talk too much about generosity. Maybe people should actually just spend their money on a Jeep.
If there's one caveat to being generous, it's
buy a Jeep.
Jeep.
Or a motorcycle.
Yeah, that too.
You can get a cheap motorcycle.
For sure. All right. So here's the outline for today.
Yeah.
Basically 4 points.
Set us up.
Three main ones. And then one, the fourth one is just like, how do we tie it all together for this podcast? So number one, what does the Bible say about the sojourner? Number two, what does the Bible say about the law? Number three, how should we think about immigration today? And then number four, what specifically does Anglicanism have to contribute to the conversation? So the first three are like the main bulk, and then we'll sort of close it up with number four.
Yeah, because I feel like sort of the two main sides of this
equation
conversation
are those first two.
Is generosity of spirit towards immigration, and then also respecting the fact that the law does exist. Which I think even for fairly centered Christians, with a biblical worldview, one of those might bristle your hairs more than the other.
For sure.
Because
shocker, the Bible has a lot more to say about the sojourner than it does about like obeying the government, but those need to be held in tandem, and we're going to talk through each of those. But number one, what does the Bibli say about the sojourner? This is pretty straightforward, but we start with the reality that I often start when I talk about this topic about the fact that Israel was a nation of sojourners, and that's true. But we need to even back up just a step further. Adam and Eve were sojourners, right? They leave the Garden of Eden, and all of a sudden, they're like walking around, and they're just like, you know, when Cain kills Abel, he's like condemned to like walk. Well, I mean, from the moment that Adam and Eve sin and they're expelled from the garden, their home is gone. Like they are on the move and they are homeless in a sense and
kept out.
And I think that's important because that's a physical manifestation of a spiritual reality, because not only are they out of their physical home, the garden, but they're also spiritually out of place. They no longer are at home, if you will, with God. I mean, there is a broken rupture within the human heart from that point on between humanity and God. And like, if there's any point that the Bible has to say about this, this is the main one, and that is that we are sojourners. We'll tie that in at the end. But we've been sojourners since the fall. And we've been spiritually sojourners, and that manifests often in physical sojourning. But that's the first point. The second is the one that I just said, is that Israel itself is a nation that started in one place, but then because of a famine in the land, economic disparity, economic challenge, food scarcity, food security issues. They sojourn to where?
To Egypt.
To Egypt. God prepares a way for them to do that through who? Joseph.
Yeah.
That guy.
Sorry, I was like trying to skip ahead.
So Joseph gets there. He becomes number two in Egypt.
Great coat.
Awesome coat. Not a very good life for a while. But then he ends up in a happy place and he brings his family over. Israel multiplies, becomes so thick in the land.
Yeah.
That they start to, the Egyptians start to feel threatened. That sounds familiar too.
It does sound really strangely familiar.
And so Egypt, rather than like seeing Israel as a blessing to them, they start to see them as a threat. And so they start to enslave them and make their life very difficult and to basically get to the point where God is like, okay, that's enough. Like,
starts killing off the babies.
Yeah, well, the Egyptians do.
But, yes.
And then a god eventually starts killing off the babies, I suppose, because of the Passover and all that. But the point being that this is not the first, I mean, our situation is not the first time immigration has become a question. In the Bible, the main story of the Old Testament is Israel as sojourners and what the implications of that are. So this happens. Eventually, they're back on the run. They leave Egypt, and they're literally like wandering around for 40 years.
Yeah.
And they're no home. They're like feeding off of like fake bread from heaven, which is real bread, but kind of holy and mysterious. And
manna translates to what is it?
What is it?
Right?
Yes.
It's so strange.
Which is so cool.
Oh, just go gather some what is it off the yeah. ground and
which I feel
it.
Like the modern day version of that is a whatchamacallit.
Oh. No, no, it's Chick-fil-A.
Have you ever had a whatchamacallit?
Yes, but it's Chick-fil-A because they're closed on Sunday, so you have to gather it up on Saturday.
Ah, there you go.
So that you have enough to still observe the holy day.
Wonderful. That's a good, great point. So they're back on the move, and what is God trying to teach them during that? Well, before they get to their land that God has prepared for them, he's trying to like just inculcate into their bones the importance of caring for the sojourner, because by the time they make it to the land, he knows human nature is to be like, oh, it's really nice to have all these things in this land, and I love the milk and honey that flows here. I don't really want to share that with other people. I just kind of want to keep it for myself. And so he's trying to remind them through these 40 years that like when you get there, you're going to be tempted to just like settle in and forget what it was like to be a sojourner. But I'm going to give you these laws that like at the minimum are written down so that when you don't do these, you'll be convicted or at least told that it's wrong.
And of course, Israel never had a problem with that ever.
No, they were perfect. They followed the law to a T. And no, so you have things like Deuteronomy 24, where it says you should not pervert justice due to the sojourner or the fatherless or take a widow's garment and pledge. You have gleaning laws, meaning like when there was extra in the field, like you weren't supposed to like glean all of your crop. You're supposed to leave the excess for the poor to come and take what they could to be able to feed themselves. This is Leviticus 19, also in Deuteronomy 24. They specifically mention the sojourner alongside groups like the poor, the widow, the orphan. They're just laws that God writes down or has Moses write down for the people to say, okay, like this was you, do this in return to the sojourner. So that's through the Torah. And then you have this long stretch of time where Israel is in the land and eventually they become sojourners again. Because why? Because they don't do this along with the rest of the law, and then they're out again. So you have them back on the run. God cares for them and says, I'm going to take care of you while you're gone. And really from that point onward, they come back to their land, but they're still sojourners within their own land. They're not in control anymore. They're dependent on other governing authorities. That gets us to Jesus, right? You have this intertestamental period. Jesus is born right into the Roman period. And he's part of a pretty like poor family, ostensibly, just like a carpenter. And after he's born, where does he go?
They flee to Egypt.
Egypt! You know, that's the cool thing about Jesus's life. It's both an embodiment of Israel's story and a renewal of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a threat. His family is fearing for their lives, especially for their newborn son. And so they leave. They go back to Egypt. They're there for a stint. And they get protection in Egypt. And then they come back. So, I mean, if there's one person that's the most famous immigrant in all of Scripture, it's Jesus. And he comes back and he is able to be back in his own land. But eventually he's persecuted and killed. So doesn't end well for him. He rises again. That's a good, solid point from there.
Yeah, but he was a troublemaker.
He was a troublemaker.
What they call good trouble.
Yeah, exactly. But then, okay, so you get Jesus, but then the post-Jesus period of the New Testament, this is to kind of cap off our biblical theology of sojourning. Paul, like, he talks about being effectively like foreigners in our own land. Like, we, those that are citizens of the kingdom of God, our true home is no longer this place. Like, we are making our way through a place that is passing away, a place that is, it is a temporary home, but it is not our permanent home. And so spiritually, which is even deeper than our physical reality, like, we are homeless until we arrive at home. Like, we haven't gotten to the place that's home yet. And so we're just passing through. And at base level, as a Christian, that should imprint in our minds how we should treat people who, in a physical capacity, are passing through, like are on the move or sojourning. So that's a quick, like, biblical theology of immigration, of sojourning. I think the next point is to talk about what the Bible says about the law, but I'll just pause there. Is there anything that pops up to your mind as we sort of walk through that piece?
Still just what I said before, that I think that whichever sort of position feels more true to you, there are going to be some inconvenient truths in the Bible, which is kind of true of most.
Yeah.
Most
people. Yep.
Most people, most issues, which to me is just sort of proof of the difference.
Yeah.
Of Christianity.
And I think it's also true. I think that we talked about this, but I think, like, if there's one point to pull out of all of this, it's that aside from Jesus, who didn't forget, most of us just forget. Like, most of us forget that we are sojourners. And if you're an American, like, at some point, your family was a sojourner here. We are a nation of people that came over. Now, we also are a nation of people that, like, conquested and took over somebody's land. So I don't know if you call that immigration or just, like, conquest. But we're a nation of people that at one point did not live here, that do live here. And throughout our history, we've been built on the concept of bringing people into this place. Obviously, we'll get into the thoughtfulness around that and how you have to be thoughtful when you bring people into a new place. Like, when you invite someone to your home, there are implications to that, and you have to be thoughtful. So that brings us to the second point, which is, what does the Bible say about the law? And most of the time when people talk through this, they reference Romans 13, which is the famous passage where Paul talks about you need to be subject to the governing authorities because and they talk about the example of, like, the death penalty. Like, if you don't obey it, then they hold the sword. And that's true. Like, God sets up governments as an extension of his, like, king of kingness. Like, there are kings that are set up across the world to rule over specific places in the world. God allows that. What that doesn't mean is that those kings are perfect. What that doesn't mean is that those kings make perfect laws. What that doesn't mean is that those kings always make biblical laws. I mean, Hitler was technically the chancellor of Germany, like, when he was elected. Yeah, God allowed that in his inscrutable wisdom. But there were certainly some things happening under his leadership that we now look back on and pretty clearly say that's not biblical.
That is the mildest way I've ever heard the Holocaust point. But yes.
I'm trying to be balanced today.
I don't think evil. You have to how be about this? About,
evil.
Yes. Very evil things.
Yes.
But so what do we do with unjust laws?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Schindler, he broke the law.
He broke the law. Yeah.
And so I think that everyone agrees that was a good thing.
So let's before we get there, let's start at, like, what does the law say here? So we have a law in this country that says to come here legally, there's a process in place and you have to follow that. And if you follow that, you can come in and you can matriculate and all that. Obviously, where the rub is, well, okay, but that's really hard. And we only let so many people in a year, and we prioritize asylum, which is right. We should prioritize people who are literally under like impending threat of violence mm-hmm. from like gang members and poor like governmental protections and all that. But also, like, if I'm living like in a subsistence capacity in Central America and I have very little opportunity, do I have like 10 years to wait for citizenship in America? Yes or no? I mean, that's a question. I'm not going to answer that here. But I think the point is there is the law. And then there's just like the reality that like things are really hard, and like our overwhelming emotion should be compassion towards somebody that is like in a really suffering position. Like if you had, like if my like child, the hypothetical, ended up in Honduras and was living in like unbelievable like subsistence conditions under the threat of gang violence, I don't know how that would happen, but if they were, just like, I would want them to be able to come to America regardless. Like, I just would want that to happen. Another example I might give is like, let's go back to COVID era, and I like have traveled to Europe and COVID hits, my family's all back in, at this point, Virginia. And I'm legally not really allowed to get on a plane because, like, the country there has shut down people leaving. You know, you have stories of people stuck for months. Mm-hmm. Let's say there's, like, an opportunity to sneak on a plane to come back to the state. I'm going to do that because I want to see my family. And, like, yeah, am I breaking the law? Yes. But there's, like, the balance of, like, what's, you know, and maybe that's wrong. Maybe when the final judgment comes, God says, Will, you shouldn't have snuck on that plane. And I'm willing to be, okay, I shouldn't have done that, you know.
I think it's really hard because God obviously cares about laws. He created a lot of them.
Yes.
His laws are also not of, you know, human wisdom. They're of God's wisdom, yeah. And they are ultimately very just. And he obviously cares about justice, and he's extremely merciful.
Yeah.
And we are called to be like him.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I think there is, if we're honest, we can't be so conceited to say that, you know, just because we are fulfilling our idea of mercy, that doesn't mean that it's necessarily God's idea of mercy. But I also know, and I'd like your opinion on this, because I've seen some stuff about it recently. There's sort of a school of thought that says, that believes that God would honor your attempts at mercy, even if they don't necessarily align with his. And you get into a lot of gray area, right? Because I think it's pretty obvious that if you're doing something that very directly violates God's commands,
mm-hmm.
then there's no wiggle room there. But, you know, if you, like with this issue, I don't know, if you aided someone in breaking the law so that they could escape to safety,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know where that line is.
There, and I think that's, which is like the age old question of like, how do you hold these two seemingly competing commands in the same, you know, at the same time? How do you hold compassion and mercy and caring for like the literal command that God gives, caring for the sojourner, taking care of them, and upholding what the law of the land is? I think at the end of the day, like, Christians can debate this, and that's okay. But I do think there's some things that are true, and that is, regardless of how you weigh those things, if, and I've talked about this in other platforms, but if your desire to uphold the law causes you to lack compassion for those that are sojourning, then that's wrong regardless. Like, you should always have compassion, even if it's sort of like, hey, look, I mean, like, this really sucks. I think we should have a better system in place. I don't agree. Like, I'm not saying me. I'm just saying, like, someone could come along and be like, I just don't think you should ever come into the country undocumented because that's the law. And I think there's a very strong biblical case to be said for that. But regardless, if you're like, I don't think that they should come in undocumented and I don't want them here and I don't think they should be allowed to be, you know, like we shouldn't have immigration basically. Like I don't want them into my country kind of thing. Well, that's just wrong. A, that's like probably a little racist, and also it's not in line with God's vision of caring for the sojourner.
I think that's the problem a lot of time, and I'll just freely admit to hopefully lay my biases out a little bit, that I would be much more in line with sort of the cultural moment. Like it would be more popular for me to say, and personally I feel more this way, that I would rather tend towards like radical mercy.
Sure.
And steer away from the law, which, as we've established, is not exactly right either, because mm-hmm. the law does matter. But I think what I would argue the most, and one of the big issues here, is that, again, specifically for our cultural moment,
yes,
I feel like there aren't a ton of people, they probably exist, but there aren't a ton of people who truly are just like, I want to uphold the law, like Javert in, sure. in Les Mis. Like, I just want to uphold the law because that's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
More typically, you will find that on this issue, people that claim to really care about the law actually just don't want immigrants here.
Sure. Yeah.
So,
and I think also it needs to be said that, like, the question that we haven't asked that's underlying a lot of this is, yeah, well, this is the law. But also, it basically means it's almost impossible to get in because you're so restricted on how many people can come in at a given time. And I fully admit I'm not a politician. I'm not a legislator. I want to lay my knowledge and lack thereof out. Like I can't claim to say I know exactly the right way to matriculate people into our society in a way that feels somewhat sustainable, et cetera. I don't know all that, but I do know mercy overrides sustainability questions. It's like, should I bring this orphan into my house knowing that it might stretch our budget? Probably. You know what I mean? So I think those are questions. I mean, that's not a black and white, but it's just a reality. And it just means that like, okay, well, the policy is this. What is the response? And I think this gets us into question three, which is like, how should we think about this specifically for our moment, which we've already been getting at. But I think there are basically two sides to this. Number one is what we've talked about, like hospitality, compassion. We have to all check ourselves. Like, is that true, what you just said? Is it true that I'm talking about the law, but really there's like some underlying prejudice?
Which I'd like to add real quick, because yeah. I want to leave that in,
yes.
and that could be controversial. And so I'm gonna make the same allowance in both directions.
Yes.
So follow me for a second.
Go.
Okay. If I think that a lot of people, a point that I made when we were writing out the episode and thinking about this, is I said that people want to say like, okay, well, you know, I'm fine with immigration, but they need to do it the right way. Mm-hmm. And my point was sort of that, when it comes to a case-by-case basis, you really don't know.
Yeah.
You could look at, and again, especially being in the southern United States, you look at a Hispanic person. Mm-hmm. That man or woman could be an American citizen,
yep.
or they could have a work visa, mm-hmm. or they could be illegal,
mm-hmm.
or they could be working towards citizenship. Mm-hmm. You absolutely have no idea
yep.
in 95% of cases what's going on in that person's life.
Yeah.
And so it's probably better to just lean into the side where we care about humanity.
Yeah.
The flip side, where I want to be fair
yeah.
and don't want to have to take anything out, is what I said earlier about, you know, I feel like a large majority of people that are on the other side of this issue, you know, examine your own heart. But at the same time, I'll be fair and say that I don't know what's in that person's heart.
Yeah.
And maybe they truly do just really care about the law
Absolutely.
And justice, and
sure.
they want things to be done the right way, and that is an acceptable position.
Yeah, sure. There again, I think as long as you're holding that position with compassion, that's still biblical. It's just that in many cases, you would think the compassion that you have has to shape your sort of like perspective on how you apply this other piece. But mm-hmm. that's the one hand. So compassionate hospitality is how we, on the one hand, think about immigration today. The other hand is not just like upholding the law, but again, to be fair, like not criticizing like law enforcement, like, yes, calling out things where it's bad, like when you're like pulling someone over and arresting them without really thinking, like asking them for stuff and all, like there's plenty of examples where that's done poorly. But we also have to just be careful not to just like villainize law enforcement or like, you know, yes, there's times where we probably should call it out and things that are being done poorly right now that we as Christians should voice. But not just like a carte blanche, everyone that works in law enforcement in this place is just evil inherently. Like that's also not biblical. Mm-hmm. We should show compassion to everyone. Even those that are doing wrong, we should see as like, you know, Jesus says, love your enemies or love somebody that's hurting you. Love people that are not kind to you. There's love in both directions. But at the same time, I think it should be said that like as Christians, we need to call out things where they're wrong and to encourage good policy.
Maybe on the flip side of what you're saying, but also in line with it, I think, is I think you could sum up a lot of this just by saying that our individual opinions on this and any number of mm-hmm. sort of hot topic issues are not that important.
Yeah.
And I think what's way more important than figuring out exactly how I, as Andrew, personally feel about immigration is because that's sort of this outward thing, is turning it around and looking inward and just being like, is my heart following biblical principles? Am I growing in Christ's likeness? And how I'm thinking about this shape that? So like, again, for me, I'm going to tend much more towards like
compassion,
let everybody in,
yeah,
you know, radical compassion and whatever. And because I tend more that way, maybe I need to think a little bit more about the flip side
perhaps,
of the issue.
But I think also, I mean, it could be very strongly argued that like at the end of the day, if you're like, hey, Jesus, at the pearly gates, like I was like just trying to be radically hospitable. Probably he's going to look at the person like look at the two. Like I was really trying to uphold the law and I was really trying to be radically hospitable. I kind of tend to feel like maybe the radically hospitable way is a little bit more like the way of Jesus. You know, yes. Like, we have to hold both.
I mean, the Pharisees were upholding laws.
That's right.
Laws that they made.
And he tended to call them out.
He did call them out a lot on that.
Yeah. So I tend to think that...
I'm trying to be equitable, Will. I'm trying, okay?
But I'm making it hard.
Yes, you are.
Okay. I guess the last question here is... what specifically about this whole conversation can we bring into the Anglican realm? And I think, or how does Anglicanism speak to this? And like, you could always make all sorts of points and you could stretch things here and there, but I think probably for me at least, and I'd love to hear your opinion, the most direct implication here is that Anglicanism, and we've talked about this before, has a very strong incarnational approach to its theology, right? We take the sacrament every week because we think that there's something holy about the ordinary, about the physical, the material. And that incarnational sacramental worldview translates into real world issues. We care about physical challenges because the physical matters. And we care about people's physical sojourning, not just their spiritual sojourning, because the physical matters. And I think Anglicans have just, I think, pretty quickly a natural pathway toward mercy, compassion, and justice toward the sojourner because we care about their physical estate. We care about them having a happy life. Like, I have a really, like, charmed life as somebody that lives in America, that was born here, that has all the economic opportunities. Like, why would I want that to be denied to somebody else? I mean, just doesn't make any sense. And so...
I think the only reason, like, it's people fear that if they have to share it, they'll lose it,
right?
Basically, which is the opposite of what we've been talking about in generosity. We've
talked about how it multiplies.
Yeah.
As somebody famously said, 1 + 1 = 3. And that someone famous was my bishop once upon a time. Just the idea that, like, in God's economy, things that don't always seem to make sense on, you know, paper makes sense when it happens. And so anyway, in this case, I just think that we Anglicans have a natural pathway into justice and mercy and into caring for the sojourner. And I think we should allow that incarnational approach to shape how we engage and think about. And like, for instance, on the ground within our own congregational setting, like we're brand new to the scene as a church. We're a church plant of like a year and a half old, but we're starting to ask the questions because we're like, all right, guys, we just need to get our act together. How do we really do this? And so we're engaging those questions as a church community, even as small as like, hey, can we just sign up to help out with a local ESL program? Or can we, spend time in, as a conversation partner to somebody that's learning this language for the first time? Small things. Saying hola to someone when you see them. I do this all the time now. It's sort of like a shibboleth. It's like a sign to someone like, I actually want you here because I'm going to speak your language. And like you've done this before, like you notice, like as soon as you start speaking their language, they feel safe.
It's funny because I agree with you on that point, but I've actually been told, I don't know, I've had that argued against me before, but
every time I've done it, I've never had the reaction always been positive.
And well, I'll tell you too.
I'd rather be at fault trying to do the right thing,
yeah,
than trying to be politically correct. And
I'll tell you two brief stories. One of which is just that. I speak some Swahili, and I was at a pizza place, and I was like, I swear on earth, our server is from East Africa. And so finally I just like asked her, spoke to her in Swahili, and sure enough, she was. And my friends were like, you're so lucky, because that would have been so awkward if she wasn't. I'm like, yeah, you're right. But I kind of knew. And the other one, like to your point, is I sold something to a guy on Facebook Marketplace, and he was messaging me almost exclusively in Spanish. And I'm like, brother, I don't really speak Spanish, but he kept doing it. And I was like, okay, I guess maybe he doesn't speak English. So I started like using Google Translate and doing my best. And when we met up, I did my best to speak in Spanish. And I said, lo siento, no hablo más español, which is probably really terrible, but it's supposed to mean, sorry, I don't speak more Spanish. Yeah. And he said, sorry, I don't speak more English. I just thought that was a great interaction. Hope that guy's doing well. Yes. Hope he's enjoying his, I think I sold him a car radio. So
amazing.
But you asked me, like, what do I think is uniquely Anglican? And as a former Presbyterian, I guess I'm former. I mean, I have been received into the Anglican Church, so I guess I'm not a Presbyterian. Hurts a little bit, but where there is a lot of emphasis on right theology, which, as we've discussed before, is not a bad
Presbyterians.
Thing. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a big emphasis in the Anglican Church on
right living,
spiritual growth. And development. And so, similar to what I said a little bit ago, I think that what's uniquely Anglican is just the ability that when you approach any question like this, you sort of have this good anchor point where you can look at the issue, you can look at how you're thinking about it, and you can ask yourself the question, is how I'm viewing this growing me in Christ-likeness? And if the answer is no, then maybe you just need to rethink it.
Yeah.
Whatever your position is.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think also, to your point, you're almost making the same point that we made earlier, like orthodoxy versus orthopraxy. Like if one tradition tends to uphold like vigorously, like this is what the word says, and then this tradition says this is how we live it out. Those are two different approaches. And I think Anglicans clearly uphold orthodoxy. Like that's the ACNA was started as a desire to uphold orthodoxy. But also we have a huge tradition as a people who live out that through liturgy and through these cadences and rhythms of life. Like we care about orthopraxy, how we actually live. And I think if that's also true of your tradition, it just sets you up to consider the human side of this. It's like, you know, the general who's making decisions from an ivory tower halfway across the world about a battlefield, you know, where men are laying down their lives, and, you know, there's that disconnect. Like, we are on the battlefield, but we also have like we have the map out at the same time. We've got the Bible and we've got the lived out version of that on the ground. And I just think that's a gift, and hopefully we can steward that well. And hopefully today we've done that just even in a small way for you, giving you a glimpse into how does an Anglican think about this? What's natural to an Anglican? If you have questions, let us know. If you have hate mail, you know, send it to Andrew's house. And, you know, I hope this has been helpful. And if it's been challenging, you know, hopefully Christianity challenges us all at different moments. And this is one that I want to always challenge me and to steward as well as we can.
If you want us to talk about more hot topics, let us know.
List them out.
If you don't, let us know. Please.
We may or may not take that advice, but
please let us know something that you're out there. We know you're out there. We see the analytics. Well, anyway, until next time.
I'm Will Schaferman.
And I'm Andrew Panic.
And this is Accessibly Anglican, a podcast
for the Anglo-Curious. Thank you.